The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The 66th session of the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs runs from March 13th through 17th this year. On this edition of Century, we'll hear highlights from day one. Let's start with this very powerful presentation by the Vice President of the Plurinational State of Bolivia, David Choquehuanca.
Hermanas y hermanos todos.
Brothers and sisters, in 1961, the Convention on Drugs committed a historic mistake, infringing the culture of the indigenous people by decreeing that the coca leaf was condemned to be phased out in the next 25 years. To those condemning words, the coca leaf would reply, I embody life in perfect health. I am a food. I am health. I am age old and am therefore indestructible. Since 1961, for more than six decades, the operators of the Western-led geopolitics of dominance have sought to disrupt its natural cultivation, its ritual use, its traditional consumption, implementing programs to eradicate coca leaf for crimes it had never committed. Colonial rhetoric, careless legislation, policies and mechanisms that contravene the basic purpose of resilience set forth in the 1961 convention have failed to stop the hope and aspirations of vivir bien from taking shape. The colonial purpose underpinning the rhetoric of the single convention has proven its inability to learn, to transcend, and to restore the state of unified awareness of the indigenous people and the sacred coca leaf. For these reasons, policies geared towards eradication and extermination of natural coca leaf, regulating its use, controlling its consumption, negotiating its industrial processing, and prohibiting its marketing have failed. We have sought to change the narrative of the 1961 convention addressing its resilience, and we believe that this forum is a singular opportunity in order to become critically aware of the legal, political architecture of the convention and its landmark achievements, which are as follows. Six decades colonizing natural coca leaf cultivation. Six decades violating the sovereignty of the indigenous people. Six decades of discriminating against the legitimate uses of the legitimate rights of the traditional, nutritional, therapeutic, ritual uses of coca leaf. Six decades of discrimination of the legitimate rights to market and industrialize natural coca leaf. Six decades of fabricating a rhetoric of consent among countries worldwide to exterminate natural coca leaf cultivation and its peoples. Six decades of experimental implementation of policies, mechanisms, rules, and regulations that contravene the basic purpose of social resilience to exterminate coca leaf. Six decades of manufacturing the sense of rejection of use of the natural coca leaf and destroying the image of the coca leaf as a cultural lifestyle globally. And thus, when mechanisms and legislation prove careless, then policies become a lie. When laws are insufficient, justice is unjust and self-destructs. When a curtain of lies falls upon the coca leaf cultivation, then it is time to release the truth and for humankind to acknowledge it.
Para terminar,
to conclude, I would like to share with you some achievements of the international community in combating drugs trafficking. In 2022, more than 20,034 tons of cocaine base and cocaine chlorhydrate were seized. More than 190 tons of marijuana were seized and destroyed in the presence of UNODC. 65 crystallization laboratories were destroyed, as well as 618 cocaine paste factories. In the same vein, 3,433 people were arrested, 94 aircraft and 4 helicopters were seized that were used for air transit, which wrought multi-million worth financial damage to criminal organizations and family clans. Through the restoration of our democracy and our model, the results achieved this year exceeded those of 2020 by 24%. We were also able to stabilize coca cultivation throughout the Andean region. Bolivia was, in fact, the only country to reduce its cultivation from 29,400 to 29,200 hectares, a net reduction of 0.7%. And through these results, we can demonstrate our staunch commitment to the Bolivian people and to the international community that Bolivia is upholding its commitments and is tirelessly working towards stabilization through a social control of coca cultivation and against the scourge of drugs trafficking. And to that purpose, it is fundamental that we regionalize our efforts in the fight against drugs trafficking. The ritual use of coca leaf is not one of addiction. The release of coca leaf is not something that we will receive as a gift. Rather, it is something to be achieved through resilient actions, overcoming adverse circumstances that have misled, that have discriminated, that have caused suffering. The release of the coca leaf will have a domino effect in the information, judicial, and political efforts we've undertaken. Halala, the natural coca leaf.
That was the Bolivian Vice President David Chuquihuanca addressing the Commission on Narcotic Drugs at its 66th annual session taking place in Vienna, Austria. Now, let's hear from Colombia's Vice Minister for Multilateral Affairs, Laura Gil.
Colombia is tired of seeing deaths, tired of pursuing its countrymen in this war against drugs, which is a failed war. This failed war on drugs is not Colombia's failure. It is not an outstanding debt of Colombia. Rather, it is the debt of the international drug control regime. In Colombia, the country that most strictly engaged in the prohibitionist war on drugs. In this millennium alone, more than 2 million hectares under illicit cultivation were sprayed. More than 1 million hectares were manually eradicated. More than 70,000 laboratories and sites for the production of cocaine and heroin were detected and destroyed, and nearly 6,000 tons of cocaine that were heading to the main markets in North America and Europe were seized. And even against this backdrop, we are dealing with significant historic increases in cocaine flows, which has left Colombia plunged into violence. For more than 50 years now, my country has set aside the fight against the world drugs problem, focusing all its possible efforts on reducing supply and in combating criminal organizations. Despite the vast investment made in terms of both human and economic resources, cocaine production has now reached its highest peak. And the 2022 World Drugs Report informs us that roughly 284 million people worldwide consume some type of illicit substance. It is quite clear that those countries where the market for use exist are making demands without contributing. They have not contributed enough in order to prevent the use of these illicit substances. The government led by President Gustavo Petro is committed to renewing its approach towards tackling drugs worldwide. And our government has opted for total peace. Colombia is now engaged in processes whereby we are seeking to put an end once and for all to an armed conflict that has lasted for more than half a century. And the final aim is not to coexist with drugs trafficking, but rather to put an end to it. Colombia's new drugs policy seeks to protect the well-being of the most vulnerable communities who have suffered disproportionately from the impact of suppression and criminalization, and in particular on women, household leaders, where we are now applying restorative justice measures. As part of our feminist foreign policy, Colombia is calling for a still greater gender-based approach to be part of our world drug strategy. Punitive efforts should be focused on the main players in drugs trafficking who have profited from this business and in so doing have caused violence. We are promoting restorative justice and therapeutic justice and social inclusion, prizing social justice, territorial integrity, the protection of the environment, fair regulation and responsible regulation of cannabis and of the coca leaf, social justice and cultural transformation and change. In so doing, we hope to see these measures further replicated and encouched in both national and international policies based on social participation, scientific evidence and a gender-based approach, all of which is in keeping with the Sustainable Development Goals and Agenda 2030, as well as the commitments derived from UNGAS 2016 and human rights treaties. We wish to recast the principle of common and shared responsibility, reject the disproportionate burden imposed on the peoples of Latin America and the Caribbean. How can we assist? Less money for guns, more for agricultural development, with access to northern markets for our rural workers. Chair, listing coca leaf in the controlled substances under the 1961 Single Convention was a historic wrongdoing against the indigenous people of the Andes. The plant is not the problem. The plant is part of our history and of our traditions. We call on all of you for your support in order to revise the current classification of coca leaf. As we prepare for the midterm review of the Ministerial Declaration of 2019, we would urge the Commission to finally understand that crises equally are a moment for opportunity. The failure of the war on drugs does not make the Commission any less relevant, quite the contrary. It means that the Commission faces a challenge, and Colombia always stands ready to and is available for working in good faith and in a collaborative spirit with the member states. Thank you very much.
That was Colombian Vice Minister for Multilateral Affairs, Laura Gil, addressing the Commission on Narcotic Drugs at its 66th annual session taking place in Vienna, Austria. We'll have more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear now from the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Türk.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak to the Commission. Our organizations share a profound concern about the health and welfare of human beings. This year, you will be preparing the 2024 midterm review of the 2019 Ministerial Declaration on persistent and emerging challenges related to the global drug situation. This is a key moment. As you look back to take stock of results to date, you will also be looking forward. You will be planning what ground should be covered by 2029 and how to do it. I encourage that the midterm review embraces full participation by civil society, including the voices of people who use drugs, and by all relevant United Nations bodies to ensure that drug policies are grounded in human rights, in particular health and development. The review also provides an occasion for the Commission to renew its strong commitment to human rights as part of transformative change to address the global drug situation. According to the 2022 World Drug Report, around 284 million people use drugs worldwide. Over 11 million people inject them. We are all aware of the continued uncontrolled growth of global markets in illegal drugs, and the impact on societies around the world. From violent crime to ruin and loss of life to mass incarceration, the toll is unbearably heavy. But if drugs destroy lives, the same can also be true of drug policies. In recent years, we have seen some politicians directing hatred against people who use drugs, declaring so-called war against their own people because of drug-related criminality, militarizing drug law enforcement, and in a few cases resorting to measures such as widespread extrajudicial killings. In many other countries, decades of punitive war on drugs strategies have failed to prevent an increasing range and quantity of substances produced and consumed. Drug crime is one of the chief reasons that well over 2 million people are currently in prisons and other facilities of detention. In 35 countries, the death penalty is prescribed for drug-related offenses. Yet, international human rights law restricts the use of capital punishment to the most serious crimes understood as involving intentional killing. I reiterate my call on states that maintain the death penalty to abolish it, including for drug-related offenses. The so-called war on drugs paradigm is detrimental to public health. Fear of arrest and widespread stigma around drug use prevent people who use drugs from accessing health care, harm reduction services, and effective voluntary treatment programs. This is clearly a factor in the very high number of deaths resulting from substance abuse, 1.2 million people in 2019, according to the latest available data, and the so-called war on drugs approach also perpetuates existing patterns of discrimination, including against people of African descent, women, and indigenous peoples. Driving the drug trade underground leads to the development of criminal networks. It is clear to many that the so-called war on drugs is not working, and a number of countries have led the way forward. For example, earlier this month, the president of Colombia told the Human Rights Council he was leaving behind prohibition as a dominant paradigm in favor of drug policies based on human rights. Ghana has also been a key supporter of a human rights and public health approach to drug policy, demonstrated by its recent drug law reform. Laos is taking steps to approve production and distribution of cannabis for medical purposes following Thailand's decision in this regard in 2022. We must continue this progress in all regions of the world and stop the so-called war on drugs. Instead, let us focus on transformative change, crafting drug policies which are based on evidence, which put human rights at their center, which are gender sensitive, and which ultimately improve the lives of the millions of individuals affected. I look forward to working with you in the months and years ahead. Thank you.
That was Volker Türk, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, addressing the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs at its 66th annual session in Vienna, Austria. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. This year was the very first time ever that the CND meeting was webcast by the UN's Web TV, which is the primary UN media service. That means these meetings are much easier to find and watch, but more significantly, UN Web TV keeps an archive of the events it webcasts. Now, CND is notoriously opaque. They have never made the video of these meetings available after the fact. Loyal listeners know that I've been complaining about that for, oh my gosh, it's more than a decade now, since well before I became the regular host of Century. This is a significant change for the CND. It's a huge improvement. Probably. Well, I mean, CND's track record is awful. So, you know, I'll check the UN's Web TV site next week just to make sure that these archived videos really are available. You know, fingers crossed. Oh, yes, by the way, the UN Web TV's URL is media.un.org. A number of side events are held during the CND meeting, none of which are recorded by the UN's Web TV media service. Some things just won't change. To celebrate the lifting of so many restrictions and the return to in-person gatherings, some side events this year were even in-person only. Some, but not all, several side events were streamed. I attended a panel on Monday, March 13th that was entitled People-Centered, Public Health and Human Rights-Based HIV Response for and with People Who Use Drugs. One of the speakers on that panel was Judy Chang, Executive Director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs.
So thank you, UNODC HIV AIDS section, for leading on this side event and really, you know, emphasizing the importance of people-centered public health and human rights-based responses for and with people who use drugs. Of course, we all know these are very important and critical principles and goals. But I think, as we all know, anyone working in this field and for people who use drugs, ourselves especially, we know how far behind we are in meeting these principles. So as a person who uses drugs who's mainly grown up in Australia, I've been one of the privileged few to be in the countries where there is sufficient coverage of harm reduction services. Unfortunately, this is not the case for the millions of other peers around the world. And INPWID is a global network working on harm reduction advocacy and human rights advocacy for people who use drugs. You know, we see the political opposition and chronic under-resourcing of harm reduction all around the world, to the point where the majority of countries do not have harm reduction, as Louisa pointed out, do not have harm reduction programs. However, we have seen some movement and some progress. For example, Pakistan, Zimbabwe, Uganda, and Egypt, which is some positive, but on the other hand, even countries where we have seen progress over the last few years, many of them are still stuck in perpetual pilot stage of services. Of course, we also see regress. You know, we've seen countries that have usually had quite robust harm reduction services really have these programs gutted and funding cuts to the point where NS needle and syringe programs usually operate out of small mobile vans and really have like limited commodities that they are able to distribute to people who use drugs that need it. Unfortunately, we're also seeing a lot of stockouts and risk of stockouts, and we're really seeing this at an unprecedented level across many countries. And this literally does put thousands of lives at risk. Of course, you know, the factors and the reasons for why we are in this situation are complex, but at the same time, it really is rooted in stigma and discrimination. For example, if you look at the low coverage of funding, it's low because governments and the public don't think that people who use drugs are deserving of basic health services and are willing to then thus fund them. Harm reduction at the end of the day is really about the belief that everyone, no matter what we put in our bodies throughout our lives, has the inherent right to tools and knowledge to protect our health and lives of both ourselves but also of the communities around us. So if we look at people-centered services, you know, they really begin with understanding, well, wanting to understand and consult people who use drugs on our needs, perspectives, demands, and experiences. So INPWID, with our members, produced three research papers. These are community-driven research papers, and we produce these because we strongly believe that this should be part of the research that informs decision-making. So first, we did produce three documents. First was the Values and Preferences document, which was commissioned by WHO in late 2020 to feed into the 2021 revision of the Consolidated Guidelines on Key Populations. Our second paper that will be published later in 2023 is on harm reduction standards. And these are a compilation of best and worst practices that document the experiences of people who use drugs as clients of services. And third is a community-led research report on pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response. This will be launched on Friday, the 17th of March, during our CND side event. and it really documents the impact of COVID on people who use drugs in order to share lessons on these experiences and devise recommendations on how the world can be better prepared for future pandemics. So the next few slides that I'm going through are just some of the quotes and testimonials. And just some of the quotes and testimonials of people's experiences in harm reduction programs. So the first one is from the harm reduction standards. And it really shows that our opinions as people who use drugs are rarely valued, as we are not asked our opinion enough on commodities, in this case on low dead space syringes. And without, you know, really consulting and meaningfully consulting people who use drugs, it means that already scarce resources get wasted on inappropriate tools. Our insights are really critical to the success of policies, regulations, and practices. And better understanding of values and preferences with more resources directed towards these values and preferences will mean successful alignment of services with what is needed. And therefore, that will lead to better health outcomes. Similarly, peer respondents from the values and preferences on the WHO guidelines was frustrated with the lack of choice that they were presented with in harm reduction programs and for being ignored when asked for expanded choice. Additional points were made by the respondents on the need to increase the number of needles and syringes received by peers, which is at the moment in the majority of countries far below the WHO recommendation. Of course, there were also points made on the implications on breaches in privacy and confidentiality, as well as lack of access points, which speak to the need for scale-up and different modalities of delivery to prioritise access to people who use drugs. Because needle syringe programs are not reaching people who need them most, or people are being deterred because of stigma, then we will never have an impact at population and therefore public health level. So these are a couple of quotes from Canada. Of course, as we all know, is experiencing an overdose epidemic because of the lack of safe supply of drugs. And the quotes point to, you know, the need to accelerate removal of regulatory barriers immediately so that more countries can have it available and we can get it into the hands of people most likely to witness an overdose and therefore save lives.
That was Judy Chang, Executive Director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, speaking on a panel entitled People-Centered, Public Health and Human Rights-Based HIV Response for and with People Who Use Drugs, which was held as a side event at the 66th Annual Session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. And finally, we turn to the United States, to the state of Colorado. House Bill 23-1202 is a measure in the Colorado State Legislature. The short title is Overdose Prevention Center Authorization. On March 11th, the measure had its third reading in the Colorado House, and it was approved. House Bill 23-1202 now goes to the state Senate. At the time of this recording, it has not yet been assigned to committee. We will be following this story as it develops, so keep tuning in for more updates. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy
for the drug
and the failed
war on
drugs.
This is Doug McVeigh.
This is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
Our policy
so long.
Of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.